1567.
Everything you need to start your day.
We all have a voice.
Use yours.
Call 021-446-0567.
Join the conversation.
On Cape Talk.
I've been following the trials of alleged gang boss figures who have ad hocly, or on an ad hoc basis, being appearing in court. But this week there was special stringent security measures at the Western Cape High Court, because in one courtroom there was Nafeez Modak and his 14 fellow accused, who are on trial for the murder of Charles Kinnear. And then in the same building there was Jerome Donkey Boyson and Mark Liffman on trial for another alleged stand-in trial for a hit last year. And then in another case is also Ralph Stanfield, the alleged boss of the 28th gang, who is currently on trial for, among other things, illegal gun possession, attempted murder. His wife is also embroiled, and he's connected to alleged extortion and tender corruption when it comes to public housing projects. But what does it mean that we have these four prominent alleged gang figures all on trial at the same time? Jeremy Veery, former head of detectives here in the Western Cape. Does it have any significance for you? Because we have these four separate cases going, four separate alleged gang boss figures on trial in three separate cases. What does it mean that we have these high flyers all in the dock at the same time, Jeremy?
Okay, let's first talk about the significance of these cases for policing. I think we've all now come to the realization that visible policing through mere patrol saturation, deployment and operations doesn't really prevent or reduce gang-related crime, particularly the organized crime element of it. So that myth has been roundly dispelled in approaching policing. But what has been successful, and this is thanks to the significance of legislation that only reached our country in 1996, and that's the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, in particular its Chapter 4 gang provisions, is that for the first time we can tackle gangs as organized criminal entities, as criminal enterprises. Now, that is a major, major difference in the sense that, you know, before we were arresting people just for the murders and for the drugs and all of those things, but we were not able to impact on the criminal infrastructure. In other words, the enterprise or business that makes it possible for the hard livings or the 28s, for example, to exist for 200 years, the mongrels for going back to pre-district to district 6 years, gangs that have been around for 50, 60 years could not be impacted on through mere visible policing and single arrests. Now we have the legislative tools to tackle them. As I'm sure you will find with some of these cases, they go back, the real start goes back up to 10 years before we're now. So it's not a last year or 2 year thing. That's the one thing that is significant.
But Jeremy, is poker being...
the business part of it, of the gang.
Yeah, but is poker being utilized in these cases? Because Ralph Stanfield on trial for attempted murder.
Ralph, I'm a witness in the Ralph Stanfield matter, and I can tell you that, and it started, that case started way back when we approached back in, when I was, I think it was 2008. Yeah. When we started tackling, instead of merely trying to do operations to go find guns, let's go and find out what in the system makes it easier for people to get licenses, for example, who are gangsters, to deal with the corruption. So the significance is here, that if we did not go through that route 10 or 5 years ago, like some of these cases, we would have not had these people on trial now. So that to me is the big secret. We would have sat with Mickey Mouse arrests of a few people in operation and getting a gun here and there and charging people with possession at the lower ranks of the gang. So that to me is is the great significance. However, this ought to point us to the direction in which we should go. Now that we know that near-visible policing doesn't impact on this crime, organized criminality, we now know have a method that produces results. However, the resourcing of detectives, who are the only people who ultimately fulfill in the end the mission of policing, they are the people who get other people in jail. And now that we have that, we need to focus on developing the capability to produce more poker type of cases, not only in specialized units in the Hawks or in provincial units. Now we must inskill people lower down, because a poker case must be tackled not only in terms of in Mitchell's Plain, for example, in terms of whether or not there's cross-border things with Athlone or with Cape Town, but it must be tackled in terms of the gang as a criminal enterprise in a part of Mitchell's Plain, for example, Beacon Valley. You can tackle the entity under this legislation now at a station level, and that is where we need to train our detectives different. I think our training, from my experience and having participated in training detectives also when I'm there, especially on this dimension of poker investigations, my experience has been that, you know, most detectives, not only here, the world over, are trained to deal with crime scenes, you know, crime scene-driven activity. In other words, there's a dead body, there's a house that gets broken into, a car gets stolen, there's a physical object where you can find in a specific location a body, a car, or whatever, and from there you build your evidence through trace evidence. However, these type of investigations do not require that type of skill. That is second. It requires a process-oriented investigation.
Jeremy,
to look at patterns, yeah.
I appreciate that proving gang affiliation or even being the head of an organization is not easy. I know that organized crime operations now require almost forensic investigation with skilled detectives, even to go to find and build financial cases to show and to prove that this is essentially a monetary organization of which violence is a part of. Currently, do we have that expertise in our investigative services?
We have it to a very limited degree. When I was around and we started with these type of investigations and testing some major cases, including the case of Ralph and other cases that detectives in Coles River, for example, dealt with, like the mobsters cases and those things. There were very few of us. So we don't have enough capacity to replicate this at station level or at cluster level, for that matter. At provincial level, well, but if this is what Western Cape or the future calls for, we need to train more detectives in enterprise investigations.
Stansfield, Modak, Boyson, and Liftman are all found guilty. They're all sentenced based on the charges that they face, including attempted murder, extortion campaigns, and they are sentenced to a time in incarceration. What impact does it have on particularly on street level here in Cape Town?
No, it doesn't have an impact because they will be replaced, you see. This is a constant war. I want to mention the example of Atlantis. You know, about 15 years ago, I testified, we were handling a case in Atlantis of a whole leadership of a fancy boys gang. Okay? We took them down in the Dura Flats and destroyed their empire down to the ground. Okay? But we warned, when I testified there, we warned that a vacuum is being created, and that conditions that produce the fancy boys in the Dura Flats must now be addressed. They, for example, they took over the entertainment center in the Dura Flats area, a project that was run back then by the city. And we warned the city, listen, now you must fill that with activity that brings the alternative. For example, the second thing is there was the issue, their graffiti was still around. So the mythology of them was still written on the walls of the Jura Flats. And we said to the city back then, listen, you must go and destroy the face of this gang now. You would go take over the terrain that they took from you back with the community. Go use and repurpose that center that you developed to show a counterculture, activity that reflects a counterculture for youth. Wipe off that graffiti that still has this mythological presence there. But however, it wasn't done. So what happened? A new gang came around, some guys from Elsie's River took over that particular territory, and we sat with the G-Force gang, as they called themselves at that point in time. We were 28. So it looked, there are social and other factors that are determinants, I think, or creates the predisposition in certain areas for things to just continue. I mean, we need to look at what that is.
Jeremy Beery, former head of detectives in the Western Cape, you're right. Gang culture is also like a mythological hydra. You cut out one leader, you cut down on one gang, you will make a couple of arrests, but there'll always be others to fill that vacuum. What do we fill that vacuum with? We fill that vacuum with jobs and purpose and meaning and alternatives, particularly for young men in the city.